Before the end of the year last year, I made mention that as we get into the new year, at least the calendar year, that we would actually revisit some of the fundamental beliefs. And so today, we actually are going to cover a portion of a fundamental belief that we have in the Church of God, a worldwide association. We'll actually cover a little bit of the second, or part of the second fundamental belief of the church. And it is this: the second fundamental belief is over the angelic realm and Satan. And I'll just quote the fundamental belief. It says, and I quote, "The angelic realm, consisting of various types of spirit beings, was created by God. A former covering cherub, Lucifer, rebelled against God's authority and became Satan, the devil. As Lucifer, he influenced one-third of the angels to follow him. Those who followed him are now evil spirits known as demons. Satan, the devil, is the adversary of both God and mankind. He and his demons influence mankind to reject God and his law, and these evil spirits have been allowed temporary dominion over the earth and have deceived the majority of human beings. The angels who remain faithful to God serve as ministering spirits to those responding to God's calling." And that's the, as scriptural references after that, but as the end, if you will, of our fundamental belief. Today, we're not going to concentrate, or I'm not going to concentrate as I present the message, on the angels or demons, though I will probably more than likely refer to them at some point, but they are not going to be our concentration. Actually, a message regarding that will be coming later in regard to the angels and demons. But today we're going to concentrate on one being, and that is Satan. We're going to concentrate on him. And I will just say this up front, this is going to be a two-part sermon. I got into, and so your next part will be February 1st. So if you want to hear the rest of it, you have to be here February 1st. Maybe after the sermon's over, you won't want to hear the rest of it. I don't know. But either way, I'm going to give it on February 1st, the second part of it. Because as I was putting all this together, I thought, oh, wow. I'm pausing this for a second. I don't want to take away from my time. Isn't that sad? I'm stopping time. I'm redeeming the time. Anyway, this isn't how you redeem time. Whenever I put a message together, I always ask questions, and I have scratch pad that I work everything out on. And I have 6 or 7 pages of scratch pad. And whenever I was putting my notes together and putting it together, kind of organizing it, I was on scratch pad number 2. Scratch pad page number 2. And I thought, I have way too much information for one sermon. We'd be here for 3 days. No, we wouldn't be that long. But we'd probably a good 2 hours. So this message will be about 1.5 hours. And no, I'm just kidding. It'll probably be right at 1 hour. As long as my time is stopped, I have all the time in the world. So once I start it again, I've got to go. Okay, I'll start. So as I give this message, please understand I'm not putting Satan on a pedestal. Not at all. That is in no way what I want to do, because I cannot wait for him to be revealed, exposed, and put away. But this particular message is to rather expose, you will, who he is and what he does a little bit, to look behind the curtain, if you will, into his thinking and such, because there are many in the world today who don't even believe he exists. And it was interesting, I was talking to another minister about this, and I was told they actually had some that had come to him and were actually mentioned to him that they didn't feel that he existed. They felt like he was, if you will, a theory, or if he was actually some type of symbol of evil. But as we go through this today, I'm hopeful that you'll see that he absolutely does exist. I looked up, tried to find some research in regard to the way people feel about the devil, and I actually found research from 16 years ago 2009, how many of you here feel like 2009 was 16 years ago? I don't. So when I looked at it, I was, oh, that's a fairly new one. And I was, wait a minute, that's 16 years old. But it was from the Barna Group, and they did a survey over faith. And with this survey, they asked questions to, and this, I found the number interesting, 1,871. It couldn't be 1870, it was 1871. Self-described Christians, and they asked them about God, Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit, Satan, and the demons. Of course, mainstream Christianity believes the Holy Spirit is an entity or a person, so of course we don't, but at the same time, they were going to ask them about this. But all 1,871 were asked one of the first questions about their perception of God. In total, and I found this interesting, over three-quarters, 78%, but this was 16 years ago, said God is the all-powerful, all-knowing, and you got to remember, these are self-proclaimed Christians. Only 78% said God is the all-powerful, all-knowing creator of the universe who rules the world today. The remaining one-quarter chose other descriptions of God, depictions that are not consistent with biblical teaching, such as everyone is God, God refers to the realization of human potential, and such as that. For the other survey items, a four-point opinion scale was used to measure people's reaction to statements about each spiritual entity. We won't go through those, and as I mentioned, we understand that the Holy Spirit is not an entity or being, but God's power. But I'm going to only concentrate on the reactions regarding Satan, and it isn't very long. It's about one paragraph. It says, 4 out of 10 Christians, 40%. Remember, this is 16 years ago. It says, strongly agreed that Satan is not a living being, but a symbol of evil. 40%. Then an additional 2 out of 10 Christians, so 19%, so we're talking 59%. 59% said that they agree somewhat with that perspective. 59%. And then a minority of Christians indicated that they believe Satan is real by disagreeing with the statement. 26% is all that disagreed. And 1/10 disagreed somewhat. I thought, that is sad. But the other 6% were not sure what they believed in regard to the existence of Satan. As I said, that was 16 years ago. I would like to see what the study would say today. But I will say this, Satan is more than a symbol of evil. He is the originator of evil. He is the originator of evil. You know, it's amazing to see how blinded, even as we read here in this Barna Group study, professing Christians are in regard to the reality of Satan. You know, Satan has been, he's been very good, if you will, at staying behind the curtain, if you will, and pulling the levers of deceit and deception. He really has. He's been very good about doing that. I mean, to get to people to think that he's just a figment of the imagination, or he's just a symbol of evil, what does that do then? That actually shifts all the blame for evil to who? To God. When God has nothing to do with evil. It's interesting how Satan has done that. So today, as I mentioned, we're going to pull back the curtain a little bit. We're going to take a peek and to look in to see who Satan is, who he is, and what he does. And so to do this, we'll actually discuss these areas. First, where it began. We're going to look at where it began. And secondly, who Satan is and what he does. Then, what Satan cannot do. And lastly, how we, the children of God, can overcome Satan, the devil. So for this first sermon, if you will, in this two-part series, we're going to cover where it began and who Satan is and what he does. That's the only set that we're going to be able to look into today. Then, as I said, on February 1st, whenever we're back, we will finish up by discussing what Satan cannot do. And that was an interesting study to me. What Satan cannot do, and I'm excited to share that with you, but I'm sharing this with you first. But if you that one was very, very interesting. And then, of course, how we, the children of God, can overcome Satan the devil. That will be on February 1st. So let's begin where it all began. That's what I'd like to do. So I want to go to John. I want to actually kind of preface everything that we're getting ready to talk about here. Let's go to John 1. We do have a few passages that we'll go to today, more than normal. But I found it necessary as we go through this. John 1 and verse 1. And we'll read, and this is some a set of scriptures that we should be very familiar with, but I would like to read it anyway. John 1 and verse 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it." All right. We're looking at that right now. Now, remember what we just read, and let's go to Colossians, the book of Colossians, and we'll go to Colossians 1 to build on this. Colossians 1, and we'll start in verse 15. "He," and who is he talking about? Who is Paul talking to about in the church of Colossae? It's talking about Jesus Christ. It says, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation." Talking about Jesus Christ. "For by Him," and who is Him? Jesus Christ, "all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth." Well, we just read back in John 1:1, that was the Word. All things were created through Him, or through Him and by Him, right? And it says here, "All things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through Him and for Him. And He is before all things, and in Him all things exist." So we understand, we should understand, that the Word, as we read in back in John 1, is Jesus Christ. The Word is Jesus Christ. And from these two passages, we see that all things were created by Him, through Him, and for Him. Correct? Absolutely. So, remember that. All right? Now we're going to Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel 28, I'd encourage you to just kind of hold your place here in Ezekiel 28. We'll be back a couple times. Ezekiel 28, and we're going to start in verse 12. Ezekiel 28, verse 12. It says, "Thus says the Lord God, you were the seal of perfection." And that literally means you were a perfect example. "Seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. The sardius, the topaz, the diamond, the beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day that you were created." Let's stop right there. Who created all things? That's why I went there first. We have to remember who created all things. The Word. Through Him, all things were created. And they were created through Him and for Him. Okay, moving on. It says, "You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created." You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created. We understand that this passage is discussing Lucifer. He's discussing Lucifer, and we see right here that Lucifer was what? Created. And who was he created by? The Word. The one who had become Jesus Christ. And what does God say about his creation right here? We read that Lucifer was the seal of perfection. He was the seal of perfection. Perfect, it says, in beauty and perfect in his ways. Perfect in his ways. But keep in mind as we go through the message today that Lucifer, who became Satan, was created. He was created by God. He was created by the Word. And we must always remember that what is created is always subject to its creator. What is created is always subject to its creator, and that which is created is never greater than its creator. That which is created is never greater than its creator. All right, so now I want to go to Job 38. But before we go to Job 38, as we're turning to Job 38, I want us to think about what it says in Genesis 1:1. What does it say in the beginning of the book of the Holy Bible? Genesis 1:1. It says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," right? Okay, so now we want to go to Job. Job 38, the reason we're going through all of these. Job 38, verse 4. Says, "Where were you?" He's talking, God is talking to Job. Job has wanted God to answer him, so God says, "All right, here I am, and I want you to stand up and listen to me, and I want you to answer me like a man. Prepare yourself like a man. I will question you and you will answer me." Verse 4. And he asked Job, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone?" When all this was taking place, it says, "When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy." Well, right here we can gather, and if you stop and you consider this, you can gather right here that Lucifer was one of the morning stars. He was one of the angels that sang together with all the sons of, it says, the sons of God. And that would be also angels shouting for what? Joy. Over what God was creating. What he was creating. If you go back to Isaiah 14:2, we won't go there right now, or 14:12, we're told that Lucifer was called son of the morning. So he was a morning star. He was singing for joy as a created being over the creation that was continuing. Interesting when you stop and you consider it. Lucifer was a very, very powerful created being. That's what he was. Who was he created by? The Word. All things were created through him and for him, the one that will become Jesus Christ. Lucifer was called the son of the morning. As we read back in Ezekiel 28, we read that he was the seal of perfection. The seal of perfection, perfect in beauty, perfect in all his ways. And then something happened. Something happened. I want to go to Isaiah. Actually, I want to go back to Ezekiel. I told you to keep your place there in Ezekiel. Back to Ezekiel 28, verse 15. I stopped right after it says, "You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created. Finishing up verse 15 of Ezekiel 28. It says, "Until iniquity was found in you." And that word iniquity literally means evil. Until evil was found in you. Iniquity, and what's interesting, whenever you look at that particular word for iniquity in the Hebrew, it is evil, and that's what it means, and it is pronounced evel, and so it has a lot, you know, it sounds a lot like evil, does it not? But at the same time, it is interesting that that same word means a dark stain. A dark stain. I encourage you to go look that up a little later on. But it's interesting that that's what that means. A dark stain. We're told here by the... And then it goes on. It says in verse 16, "By the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence within, and you sinned. Therefore I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst," it says, "from the fiery stones." Here, the perfect being, Lucifer, changed. He changed. We're told that iniquity was found in him. A dark stain. The Hebrew word for trading, because it says, "By the abundance of your trading," the Hebrew word is rekulah. Rekulah, and it means, and it's interesting, the definition for this, or the meaning of this, is quite interesting. It means traffic or to be trafficked. We know what that word means, to be trafficked, or to peddle. Now, the word is actually derived from the root word rakal, which means to go about from one another for trade, gossip, or slander. And it is actually connected with the Arabic phrase, and I found this interesting, kick a horse to make it go. Think about that as we go along. Kick a horse to make it go. Now, this gives a little bit of insight, if you will, into how Lucifer may have begun. How he may have begun. You know, to be, if you will, to get that dark stain, for things to start to change. It sounds to me that he had to become filled with something. Something had to happen that made him start to change his thinking. Something happened. And really, if you think about it, it sounds like to me that he was kind of the master of the deal. And what he said happened. He made it happen. And you know, this could have gone to his head. You know, what I say happens. Because it says that he's trading, the abundance of your trading, the peddling, the trafficking, his commerce, whatever he is doing, causing to kick a horse to make it go. It's interesting to consider that this could have gone to his head. I believe this could have had caused Satan come to the point where he didn't believe God was really who he was. Or he wasn't as powerful as he really was. You know, Satan had to come to the point that he felt he could accomplish what God was accomplishing. That he could actually accomplish things better than God could accomplish them. I'm going to go to Isaiah 14. We're not too far away from that. But Isaiah 14, and we'll pick it up. Isaiah 14, we'll pick it up in verse 12. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will, and it, when it talks about the stars of God, it's talking about the angels of God. And he goes on to say, I will also sit on the mount of the congregation, on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, and I will be like the Most High. And what happened? Here he got to this point, things changed in his mind and his thinking, and he got to the point to where he took action on his thoughts. Well, if you remember what we read back in Ezekiel 28:17, what was it said? We read that God cast Lucifer to the ground. What did Jesus tell his disciples back in Luke 10:18? What did he say? He said, I saw Satan fall like lightning to the earth from heaven. Where does he throw him to? The earth. Okay, so we went through Genesis 1:1. We went through all of this and where he came to at this point and juncture in his life, if you will. But Genesis 1:2. We had Genesis 1:1 and now we have Genesis 1:2. What does Genesis 1:2 say? The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. You got to remember the morning stars and the sons of God. What did they do whenever God was creating the earth? They says they rejoiced, right? Do you think it was full of darkness? No, a lot happened between verse 1 and verse 2. Verse 2, the earth was without form and void and darkness was on the face of the deep. Something terrible happened between verse 1 and verse 2. Here in Genesis, but back in Genesis 1. Personally, I feel this was due to the rebellion of Lucifer. That's my personal feeling. Something cataclysmic happened to this earth. I believe personally this was due to the rebellion of Satan, the rebellion of Lucifer, the one who had become Satan. Revelation 12. Revelation 12, and this is why I say this. Revelation 12. Verse 3. Revelation 12 gives quite a bit of history. There is so much history, and this covers a lot of ground as far as timing goes, many, many years, if you want to put it that way. But we'll pick it up in verse 3. It says, "And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having seven heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his head. And his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth." Do you think that that was Satan throwing them to the earth, or do you think that was God? Just a thought. They came with him because, of course, Lucifer, he is the one who, if you will, influence them. We'll drop down to verse 9. It says, so the great dragon, the same dragon, we understand that this is Satan because he was cast out, that serpent of old. This is in another timing. It says, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth and his angels were cast out with him. First time he was cast out and will be the last time he is cast out. You know, the term Satan here in this particular section of passage and within the New Testament means adversary or enemy. Adversary or enemy. Lucifer became the adversary. Satan became the enemy of God and all that God is about. That's what he became. And I'll say all that God had created. Satan is also described right here in verse 9 as the great dragon, the serpent of old, called what? The devil and Satan, better known as Satan the devil. Right? How many times have we heard that? Satan the devil. Well, we understand that the word Satan, the term Satan means adversary. Well, devil, the Greek word for devil is diablos, which means false accuser or slanderer. Kick a horse to make it go, maybe? Just thinking about this, putting it all together. Lucifer, that meant light bearer, light bringer, shining one, son of the morning. The perfect being became Satan the devil. Lucifer went from being perfect, being the light bringer, being the son of the morning, being created, still is created, to becoming, as we're told, the adversary, the enemy that accuses and slanders. You know, I truly believe that, and I don't doubt this personally, that Satan slandered God to the angels. He slandered them to the angels that decided to become part of the revolt. Then, due to Lucifer's standing, because he was a powerful angel, due to his standing and importance, at least in his own mind, he leads the fallen angels. He leads them. After all, it was Satan who sinned first. He was the author and, if you will, initiator of sin into God's created world. And it didn't stop with his demons. It didn't stop with a third of the angels. He kept going. You can go to Genesis 3. We're not going to turn there. I encourage you to go. You know the story. We should know the story. I hope we know the story. We go to Genesis 3 a lot. But the pinnacle of God's creation fell to the enemy. Fell to the adversary. How? By his persuasive words and devices. He kicked the horse and it went. And he hasn't changed a bit. That's where it began. He was perfect in all of his ways. He was an amazing creation. And he became who he is today. We're going to talk a little bit about the way that he is described here in a little while. But I want to make mention of, you know, we read representations. Fire red dragon, 7 horns, 7 heads. He sounds horrific, does he not? I mean, when you think about what it is and how he's described, he sounds absolutely horrifying. Remember that. We'll touch back on that here in a little bit. But, as I mentioned, this is where it all began. And where did it begin for Lucifer? He was created. And he made a choice. See, God gives free moral agency to all of his intelligent creation. He does. And he did the same with his angels. And Lucifer chose. And now Lucifer is the enemy of God. He is, if you will, as I said, the author and initiator of sin into God's created world. Now, that's where it began. Who is he? And what does he do? And when we get into this, we're literally only going to scratch the surface. Literally. As I was going into this, it actually made me cringe that there is so much about Satan the devil. There is. I mean, he is that horrible of a being. He absolutely is. First of all, we need to preface what we discussed by going back to what Jesus brought back to the destroyed dark earth in Genesis 1-2. What does it say in Genesis 1-3? Because you got to remember, I referenced it, that the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the earth. In Genesis 1-3, what did God say? Let there be light. Let there be light. And what was the next thing he did? He separated the light from the darkness. Right? Let there be light. And there was light. Light existed prior to a catastrophic occurrence. It did. Because that catastrophic occurrence brought darkness. It brought darkness. The one who had become Jesus Christ, brought light to the world. He brought light to the world at creation, but he also brought light to the world again at recreation. We have to remember that. He brought light to the world whenever he created everything. Even Lucifer was called the son of the morning. But then he also brought light to the world at the recreation. But he also brought light to this world when he came as a human being. He was the light of the world. To do what? To give light to men. Something we should always remember. That's all God is about. In God, there is no darkness. None. Only light. No darkness at all. Jesus Christ is the light of the world, and those who follow him will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. That's what it says in John 8, verse 12. So I brought this out because light had to come to divide the darkness. It had to. Why was there darkness? Why was there darkness? Acts 26. We'll read verse 13. This is interesting because this is where Paul is explaining to King Agrippa what transpired whenever he was called and he began to become converted. Acts 26, verse 13. He says, "At midday, O king, along the road, I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, shining around me and those who journeyed with me. And when we had all had fallen to the ground, I heard a voice speaking to me and saying in the Hebrew language, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads.' So I said, 'Who are you, Lord?' And he said, 'I am Jesus, who you are persecuting. But rise and stand on your feet, for I have appeared to you for this purpose, to make you a minister and a witness both of the things which you have seen and the things which I will yet reveal to you. I will deliver you from the Jewish people as well as from the Gentiles to whom I now send you. To do what? To open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light, from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who are sanctified by faith in me.'" Darkness is associated with who? Satan. Darkness came about because of Satan. And darkness is the power. It even says it here. It is the power of Satan. Darkness is the power of Satan. Colossians 1. Colossians 1. Verse 11. Colossians 1, verse 11. Actually, we'll pick it up. I just want to read one verse here. It says, "He has delivered us," and who is he? Jesus Christ. "He has delivered us from the power of darkness and translated us," actually the Father has delivered us from the power of darkness and translated us into the kingdom of the Son of his love. He has delivered us from the power of darkness and translated us, those who have chosen, those he's called, those who have chosen to live his way of life, have translated us into the light of his kingdom. So we read here and we find that Satan is the ruler and power of darkness. Satan is the ruler and power of darkness. I want to go to Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, we begin building on this. This is who he is and this is what he does. Ephesians 6, verse 12. This is actually referenced in the sermonette about the armor of God. But in verse 12, before you get into the armor of God, it says this: "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the principalities and against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." It says right here, actually I should have started in verse 10, because who was the Apostle Paul talking to? He says, "Finally, brethren." He's talking to us. He says, this is what you wrestle against. It's the powers of darkness. And he says, the rulers of the darkness of this age. And remember what we've just read. I want to go to 2 Corinthians 4. Like I told you, there's a few passages this time, but bear with me. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 1. "Therefore, since we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we do not lose heart, but we renounce the hidden things of shame, not walking in craftiness," as 2 Corinthians 4, verse 1 through 4 says, "not handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. But even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them." It's interesting, the word blinded here in the Greek is "touflo," and it literally means to obscure, to make blind, to darken the mind. Guess what Satan has done? He's darkened them. How? By his power of darkness. He has. Satan is the ruler and power of darkness. Darkness is anything that is not of light. And we always have to remember that. Darkness is anything that is not of light. Darkness is opposite of light. God separated it from the beginning, didn't he? What do you do when you open a box? Does darkness stay there or does the light come in? You know what it does. You can't make the darkness stay anywhere if there's light present, correct? Absolutely. Doesn't mix. And that was such a wonderful thing that God has allowed us to see in the physical, this physical creation, to help us understand there is a stark difference between them, light and darkness. Darkness is anything, and this is one thing that we have to understand, darkness is anything at all that is divided or disconnected from God. That's what darkness is. Darkness is evil and darkness is death, because darkness is the absence of life. Darkness is the absence of light. Absence of light. And what is life? Light. Actually, let's go to 1 John 1. 1 John 1. First John 1, verse 5. We're told, "This is the message which we have heard from him and declare to you, that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him and we walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth." Darkness is separation from God. Absolute separation from God. It is blindness to his way of life. It is ignorance of his truth. It is the obscuring of the mind, the corruption of the mind. It is a mind that is darkened. And that is the realm that Satan rules over. Darkness. All darkness is of Satan. All of it. Every bit of it. If there is any shading of the truth, any hint of darkness, guess what it is of? The ruler of darkness. Satan. Evil and darkness is not godly or human. It is satanic. Satanic. That's what it is. It is satanic. And darkness is what Satan peddles. It's what he peddles. And he's gotten very good at peddling. He's gotten very good at trafficking. He's been gotten very good at trafficking darkness, along with his demons, those whose he's deceived. They are ministers of darkness. They really are ministers of darkness. If you go to 2 Corinthians, you can write it down. We're not going to go there, but 2 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15, it talks about those who do those things for Satan, because even Satan transforms himself into an angel of light. But those who do things for them are his ministers. And the word ministers in the Greek is diakonos, and it literally means one who executes the commands of another, especially that of their master. And what do? That's exactly what they do. Satan is the ruler of darkness, and his demons are ministers of darkness. And darkness is in full opposition to light. Full opposition. So what does this make Satan? It makes Satan an adversary. We've already gone over that, but we're going to go over it a little further. This makes Satan an adversary. Satan is an enemy. Like I said, we touched on this a little bit ago, but he is an enemy to who? An enemy to God. He's God's enemy, but he's also the enemy of everything that God is about. And as I said earlier, this includes everything that is connected to God. So that means it includes you and it includes me. We are his enemy. He is our enemy. So if he is our enemy, what does that make us? His enemy. Correct? Absolutely. I want to go to 1 Peter. Because 1 Peter, and this is a passage we should all know. If we don't know, remember it. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. And this is interesting how when I was reading it this time, when I was going through all this research, when I came to this, I thought, you know, I've read it over it 100 times or more, 1,000 times maybe, and I've never looked at it this way. He says this in verse 8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary. I've gone over this I don't know how many times, but it really brought it home, because he's saying, this is your adversary, the devil. Yours and mine. It means this is concerning you. Anybody who reads this, it concerns you, it concerns me. Your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Your enemy. He is your enemy. The Greek word for devour here, this is what he wants to do to us. And the Greek word, and I'll probably totally botch this one up, I'm no Greek scholar, but it is katapaneo. And it means to swallow down, to gulp up, to drown, to engulf, to overwhelm. That's Satan's ultimate goal. How does he do this? How does he do this? I want to go back to the book of Job. Staying right along in here with him being our adversary. Job. I keep your place in Job because we're going to come back to Job. Job 1. Put my marker in there too. Verse 6. Now, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. God's adversary. Our enemy. It says, and the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? So Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth, from walking back and forth on it. I mean, I think about that. I think about how Satan goes back and forth upon the earth to find those he can attack, that he can gulp up, that he can actually engulf, he can drown, and he can overwhelm. That's what he's trying to do. That's the only reason he goes back and forth on the earth. 1 Peter 5, 8. Your adversary. How does he attack? How does he attack? Well, Satan uses, you can go to different passages. I'll give you just some. You can go and look at them later. I'm looking at my clock. We don't have time. But 2 Corinthians 2:11, 2 Corinthians 11:3, and 2 Corinthians 11:14. 2 Corinthians 2:11, 2 Corinthians 11:3, and 2 Corinthians 11:14. He uses devices. Satan uses devices to get us to succumb to darkness. What are his devices? What are his devices? Well, just a few. You think about it. I've listed a few, and there are so many more. I had over 48 that I had written down, and I cannot share them with you all. Share them all with you. I can share them with you all, but I can't share them all with you. Released right now, not right now. And well, I'll probably have some of them in the next message, but just a few. Deception. Distraction. Temptation. Accusation. Discouragement. Neglect. Envy. Apathy. Doubt. Confusion. Fear. There are so many more I could list. But those are what he uses as devices. And as the adversarial ruler of darkness, he uses these devices for his crafty benefit. Let's go back to his name that we defined. Satan, the devil. Slanderer, he is our enemy. He is our adversary, the slanderer, false accuser. You know, just a bit ago, I named accusation as one of his devices. He uses this a lot. So this is what he also is. He is an accuser. He's our adversary, but he's the power of darkness. He's our adversary. He's our enemy, and he's also our accuser. This is what he does. It's our accuser, your accuser, my accuser. Satan is labeled as the accuser of the brethren. And so, if he's labeled as that, why wouldn't he accuse God's brethren? He does. Did you know he's actually guilty of accusing God? You go back to Genesis 3, verse 4 and 8. And Satan actually accused God of withholding knowledge from Adam and Eve. He accused them of lying to them. He called God, he accused God of being a liar. Then he accuses God of his motives and goodness towards Adam and Eve. You know, if he is willing to accuse God, why wouldn't he accuse you? And why wouldn't he accuse me? Well, he will. Because he accuses us before God. You can go back to Revelation 12:10. It says, the accuser of the brethren who accuses them before God day and night. In Revelation 12:10, the word accuser in the Greek literally means to speak against one in the assembly. To speak against one in the assembly. The assembly of what? The assembly of God. His church. His people. Satan speaks against not only God, but he speaks against God's people. He accuses you and he accuses me. It says before God, day and night. Satan is always speaking against those in God's assembly, God's house, his church. Why do you think that is? And how do you think Satan goes about doing this? Because do you think it's always just Satan in front of God accusing us? I'm going to say no. In Job 1, I told you to hold your place there. I want to go back to Job 1. Maybe we didn't even leave there. At least I didn't leave there. Job 1 and verse 6. It's interesting. I'm going to read this just real quickly. Satan accuses God again here in verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil." And remember, if God said this, it's got to be true. Because God does not lie and God doesn't play games. If Job was one who fears God and shuns evil and he was a blameless and upright man, what do you think Job was? What he said. And then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job not fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and the possessions have increased in," it says, "the land. But now, you stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." So first, right here in this passage, what we just read, Satan accuses God again, and this time of unfairly protecting Job. You ever got that out of there before? He accuses God of unfairly protecting Job. And then Satan accuses Job of being insincere. He is accusing Job of only doing what God says because God has protected and taken care of him. And as soon as the things that God had given him are taken away, he says, "Job will curse you to your face." What an accusation. Over somebody that God called blameless and upright and one who shuns evil. Job 2. This is where it gets even more ridiculous, this accusations that he has. Verse 1. "Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord." This is after, you got to remember, this is after God says, "All right, but you spare his life. You spare his health. You spare the man, Job." And what did Satan do? Killed his family. Took his possessions. The only one that was left, I think, is his wife. And we'll find out why. It says, "There was a day when the sons of God came before and to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?'" He said the same things he said before. "Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil and steal? He holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause.'" So Satan says this, skin for skin. "Yes, all that a man has, though, he will give for his life. But you stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face." Now Satan accuses Job of not cursing God because he was afraid that God would bring a worse punishment. That's what he accused him of. Job was accused of being willing to lose or give up his children and all that he had as long as he wasn't touched. Skin for skin. In other words, Satan was accusing Job actually of selfishly being okay with what happened as long as he was fine. That's pretty sad. What an accusation. But God knew the truth. He knew the truth, and he always knows the truth, but that doesn't stop Satan. Because his ultimate goal, he doesn't care what God thinks. All he cares about is ruining you or me. That's it. It is interesting to see that both accusations Satan made about Job show us something else. But we won't touch on that now. That'll be in the next message. Anyway, that was mean, I know. But I would encourage you to continue on in the book of Job. And you will see, as you go forward in the book of Job, you'll see that Satan, it seems like Satan kind of goes away. He disappears, but he doesn't. He doesn't after he terribly afflicts Job. Actually, Satan moves on behind the scenes. Moves on behind the scenes. And he first uses Job's wife, and then uses his friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And then later actually even uses Elihu. But Job's wife and Job's friends make accusations against Job. Job 2:9, Job's wife, what does she do? She actually accuses him of holding on to his innocence. "Do you hold on to your integrity? Curse God and die." In other words, what she was telling him is, "It's your fault. Just curse God and be done with it." That was his own wife. And then, you can keep going, and I encourage you to. But I'll give you some passages. Job 4:7 and Job 11:6. This is where Eliphaz and Zophar both accuse Job of sinning. "It's all because you've sinned. And that's why you're suffering. That's why you've lost everything that you have, and that's why you're suffering." Bildad then accuses Job in Job 8 verses 1 through 6 of rejecting God's discipline, and it's your fault that you rejected it because that's showing that you don't have a repentant heart. How dare you? Then Zophar, in Job 11, verse 2 through 4, accuses Job of being arrogant. Then Eliphaz accuses Job of being proud, self-righteous, full of yourself, and speaking against God in Job 15, verses 1 through 14. And none of these accusations are true. They weren't. God called Job what? A blameless and upright man. One who shuns evil. And does, like I said, does God lie? No. And God doesn't play games. We don't have time, but I encourage you to go through the book of Job and find the many accusations. But where did those accusations come from? Satan. Ephesians 2:2, we're told that Satan is the prince and power of the air, and he works in the sons of disobedience. You have to remember, Satan, he has the ability to infiltrate the mind. He does. But we're given Ephesians 6. We'll talk about that later too. But he does. He's the prince and power of the air. And many times, you know, yes, Satan accuses the brethren before God day and night, but he doesn't always do it himself, personally. Many times, he uses others. You know why? Because it's more destructive. It's more destructive. Using others causes people to begin to develop a perception of someone else, true or not. And it begins to foster what? Oh, here come those devices. Doubt, mistrust. And ultimately, what does it cause? Division. That's what it causes. So let me encourage you. If you hear an accusation about someone else, don't listen. Don't listen. There's a reason that God said, don't take an accusation of a minister unless for two or three witnesses. And that should go across the board for any of us. Why is it we shouldn't listen? Because the accusation, no doubt, is being fostered by the accuser himself. Satan the devil. The accuser of the brethren. And I would also encourage you to be careful what you say about others. Because it just may be Satan that he's found a mouthpiece. And you don't want to be a mouthpiece of the accuser of the brethren. I don't want to be a mouthpiece for the accuser of the brethren. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, how to combat that, in our next message. I'm looking at my time and I still have 2 pages of notes. Do you want me to keep going? Okay, I will keep going. Something else we need to consider about Satan and what he does. Job 8. This may be the longest message I ever give you. Hopefully not the last one. Job 8:44. Job. John, I know where I'm going. It isn't Job. John 8, verse 44. John 8, 44. We're just going to pick it up in kind of the middle of a thought here where Jesus Christ, he's talking and he's speaking to Pharisees, and he says, "You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and a father of it." Once again, the devil, it says devil here, and that we know what that means, slanderer, accuser. And we're told that he does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. So Satan is a liar. Satan is a liar, and it says he's the father of it. But one other thing that we need to consider in this passage is the fact that Jesus Christ combined murderer and liar. He didn't do that flippantly. He did that on purpose. Murderer and liar, and he said it in the same conversation within the same sentence to describe Satan. That's pretty powerful. Jesus plainly stated that Satan is a liar and a murderer. It is interesting to consider that lies kill. Lies bring about war. Lies bring about confrontation. Lies bring about all sorts of things. Lies create divide, division in all sorts of ways of life. Satan has used lies to try and destroy and kill the people of God for millennia. And you can, look where he started. The lie itself was Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And it kept going from there. You know, I've heard many times where people say, and this, well, I got to hurry up, but where people will say, you know, Satan was the ruler over the world, and he sure ruled over them in the Garden of Eden, didn't he? No, he wasn't the ruler of the world. He was given dominion by us. God gave us the dominion over his creation, over the earth. Satan got it. He became the default ruler because we came under his rule, because we succumbed to darkness. We succumbed to sin. And all of us have done it. And what is God doing right now? He is changing that. And Satan doesn't like it. Anyway, interesting thought, kind of a side point, and shouldn't have deviated. Not yet, not right now anyway. But it is interesting to consider how many times Satan has tried to kill God's people in so many different ways by lies and deceit. Think about Esther and the story of Esther and Haman. You know, what was Satan moving Haman to do? Kill God's people. Think about Daniel, one of his great, the great prophets and his servants. They try to kill him through what? Lies and deceit. Where did it come from? Satan, the devil. So many. Jesus Christ, think about that. False accusations, betrayal. Where did it come from? The power of darkness. He says, you do this because it is the time of the power of darkness. And who is that? Satan, the devil. The adversarial accuser of God's people. Happened in the first century church. And who was Satan using? Saul, who had become Paul. Think about that. Until what? God woke him up, literally, by blinding him with light. By putting the like scales over his eyes so he couldn't see. And turning him. It's amazing. He was breathing threats to kill God's people. And it was all because of misinformation. Lies. From who? None other than Satan the devil. To destroy and kill the people of God. And it's going to continue until Jesus Christ returns. It just is. Satan misuses the scripture to deceive and mislead. He twists the scripture. You can go back to Matthew 4, Mark 4. You can see whenever Satan tempted Jesus Christ, what did he use? He used his own truth against him to use it to try to get him to sin. To get him to succumb to his devices. And Jesus Christ wouldn't do it. And how did Jesus Christ respond? With his own words. But Satan misuses scripture and to deceive and mislead. And if he did it to Jesus Christ, he'll do it to us, guys. He will. He absolutely will. Many times, scripture has been used to manipulate thoughts, change doctrine, or deceive even the most Bible literate brethren. After all, we know Satan transforms himself into an angel of light. He does a good job of hiding and lying about who he really is and what he does. He just does. This is something that I've been thinking about. And I made mention of it earlier, how he's described as a dragon. He just has this horrid, if you think about it, it's just, he's an ugly, horrid looking being. But do you think that's really what he looks like? I don't. He was created beautiful. He even says he can transform himself into an angel of light. I think he is terrible. I think that is a description of who he is on the inside. Who he is and what he is and all he's about. But does he still look like the day he was created? perfect in beauty, but as foul as can be on the inside. I say this because another type of lie to consider that Satan uses all the time is temptation. And I encourage you, now Satan is called the tempter. He is. It's Matthew and 1 Thessalonians. But I encourage you, and you go to James 1, verses 13 through 15, it talks about how temptation, it allures. And I encourage you to go to Proverbs 6 and read Proverbs 6 and read Proverbs 7. At the end of Proverbs 6 and then all of Proverbs 7, pretty much all of Proverbs 7, because it actually explains something that looks so good that is so bad. Any temptation that you have been up against, is it a temptation because it is the most horrible thing that you could ever lay your eyes on? No. It's usually because it's something you can't resist. Who do you think's behind it? Satan, the devil. The end result of that temptation, and a temptation is only something that is going to draw you away from God. That's all a temptation is. But the end result of that temptation is everything Satan is about. It just is. If anyone gives in to temptation, destruction looms. It does. Especially, and I'll just throw this out there, especially sexual temptations. Think about the relationships they destroy. Think about the thing, the relationships they kill, the character that it destroys, the families that it destroys, and so much more that is destroyed due to giving into sexual temptations. And you want to know what a temptation is? It's a lie. That's all a temptation is. It is an absolute lie. God doesn't tempt, because God, for one, doesn't lie. A temptation is telling you that this is going to be good. It's good for you. You need this. You want this. You can't live without it. In all reality, it's a lie. And it is an absolute lie. And I'm going to stop there for now. But we have literally just peeked behind the curtain. Literally. Scratch the scratch on the surface. Scratch the scratch and scratch on the surface. But we've just looked at, just so ever so shortly and so briefly, who and what Satan is. There is so much more. And really, to be honest with you, that's all we need to see. To see what he is. You know, Satan strives on a daily basis to wreak havoc in this world. And we see the results of who he is and everything that's going on. We absolutely see it. But he also, it's evident in the lives even of the people of God. It is. You got to remember and don't forget that he does. He walks back and forth on the earth to see whom he may devour. He is your enemy. He is my enemy. And he's walking back and forth on the earth to see who he can use to do his works. The works of the devil. Satan is powerful. He is powerful. And I won't at all negate that fact. He is a powerful being. And God gave him that power. But he has misused that power. And he has the whole world under his sway. And he works hard to set traps and to use his devices, everything that he can, so that we come back under his power. That's what he wants. He wants to trip up the people of God so he can accuse them before our Father in heaven. That's what he wants to do. As I said, Satan is powerful, but not as powerful as he would want us to think. But you'll have to wait. You'll have to wait, because that's where we're going to pick up the message in a couple weeks. What Satan cannot do. What he cannot do. So I would encourage you for the next couple weeks, drill down on what it is that we've discussed. And if you would like, go and uncover some more of what Satan is all about and what he does. That way, in a couple weeks, whenever I present the second message, you'll have a better understanding of Satan the devil, our real and active accuser, our enemy. I am sorry that I went over time, but I'm not. But at the same time, there is so much that I could have said, so much that I didn't say. Maybe one of these days we'll revisit this again, but I will finish up with the second part on February 1st.